supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, the end of summer often signals sadness because it means the end of the beautiful annual bedding plants that made our landscapes look so lovely. Well, today we're going to tell you how to bring one of the best of those bedding plants inside and make it not an annual but a perennial. You won't want to miss it. Otherwise, it's a fascinating phone call show. That means we're taking that heaping helping of your telecommunicated you-know-whats at 1-888-346-9499. Jennifer, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Jennifer. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing just fine. Thank you. Where is Jennifer good?
Hamilton, New Jersey.
Okay. What can we do for Jennifer in New Jersey?
I have a spider mite / aphid problem. I bought some plants from a grocery store like 2 months ago at the beginning of the season. Mm-hmm. After I got those plants, I noticed that my other plants started like becoming like stunted and suffering a little bit. They weren't like blooming, and like all the fruits and vegetables were starting to like rot before they matured fully, I guess. I looked it up online because I noticed that there's these little orange guys, like, all over my mandevilla plant.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and then also these little, like, black spider-looking things, and they've left nasty white residue all over my leaves.
And these are plants that you have outdoors right now?
Yes, I have them on my patio.
Oh, okay. And what are the other things besides the mandevilla vine?
I have a hibiscus flower.
Oh, God, yeah. You picked up Typhoid Mary and her sickly sister.
That's what I thought. So, mandevilla, hibiscus, I have arugula lettuce, I have jalapeno peppers, rosemary, like a flower set up out there, and they've slowly gotten to almost every one of them.
Not to the rosemary.
Yeah, even the rosemary, and they killed the basil, too.
Well, basil, there is basil downy mildew blight going around, that if you had the Italian large leaf basil, odds are it was doomed for a different reason. And these plants are out on a patio. They get plenty of sun?
Yeah, no, they're open to sun probably a good portion of half the day.
Okay, what half?
The afternoon.
Yeah, that's one of the problems. When you have these precocious plants, these disease and pest-prone plants, they need morning sun. Are they open to the air? Have they been watered by all the rain we've gotten, or have you been doing the watering?
No, they've gotten all the rain, plus I've done some additional watering.
Okay. So you realize that they have been soaking wet until like 1 o'clock in the afternoon, more days than not this summer.
I guess so.
Yeah, and you potted them up yourself, right? You're not keeping them in the small pots that they came in, are you?
No, I changed the pots.
And what do you fill the pots with?
The soil I got at the grocery store, like potting soil.
Okay. Have you tried getting a hose and shooting these creatures off of the plants with sharp streams of water? And what you want to do is you want to cradle them with one hand, and you want to really shoot them until, you know, it should sting your hand and just knock all the pests off with that. You bought plants that it is the most difficult to get rid of those insects on.
Oh, man.
So they should not come in over the winter. You should be able to clean up the rosemary and maybe overwinter that inside. But it sounds like your patio is really only going to work really well for you during a season when we have a lot of sunshine, when you're providing most of the water. And boy, I tell you, morning sun is so much more important than late in the day sun. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, your plants are always going to be struggling out there, and I would avoid tropical plants as much as you can. It sounds like I'd have a patio full of begonias or something and impatience. No, I'm serious. Like shade-loving, pretty plants, but you know, pepper plants need 8 hours of sun a day. Those tropical things, that Mandevilla vine, I mean, God, that thing wakes up in the morning going through plant disease books, trying to figure out what it can come down with that day.
Is there a way next year when I go to the store, anything specific that I should look for if I decide to get like a tropical plant to make sure that this doesn't happen again?
Well, you can't guess the weather. So, you know, if you're going to grow tropical plants, they're going to need more sun and more airflow. But research before you go. Don't go to like a grocery store and just pick from their plants. Do a little bit of research, then go to a good independent nursery or garden center. Tell them about your conditions, and they will sell you well-raised bulletproof plants.
Oh, okay.
All right, Jen?
All right. Okay, well, thank you very much.
My pleasure. Good luck. Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Kent, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi.
Hello, Kent. How are you?
Great. How are you doing?
I am doing just fine. Where is Kent Great?
Hollidaysburg, PA.
Oh, okay. Very good. What can we do for Kent in Pennsylvania where every day is a holiday?
We have a project in the front yard, and we're going to go ahead and plant boxwood trees, shrubs, I suppose, around the perimeter of the sidewalk and the front walk. So we have the sidewalks being torn up in the next couple of weeks, so we're going to hold off until the construction is done and we're putting in pavers, so forth and so on. So my question is about, after all the construction is done and we plant the boxwood trees, it's a very dog-friendly neighborhood. So what do I do to prevent the dogs from marking their spot on my new boxwood shrubs?
Yeah, you're in a world of trouble here, pal. Well, first of all, I want to take the opportunity to warn you that boxwoods are really unusual in terms of evergreens. A lot of people have killed their boxwoods by feeding them, quote, evergreen food that acidifies the soil. Boxwoods are one of the only evergreens that requires an alkaline soil. And they really don't do well when they are mulched. They like their trunks to be growing out of bare ground, and they like that bare ground to be treated with a little bit of wood ash or lime every year to keep the alkalinity up. If they are going to be subject to any of this kind of abuse, you really want to make sure the plants are as healthy and in the best growing environment, because obviously this is going to be some stress. Now, what can you do to situate them where they're less obvious of a target? Can you put them back a little bit?
I think I'm quite limited on room, because the front area where we're putting the boxwoods is a small area. So if we go further in towards the house off the sidewalk, it's going to intrude into the landscape area that we've already got set up.
Okay. Then in your design, as you are installing the boxwoods, leave enough room because you are going to install a low wooden fence. Not a solid fence, oddly enough. I don't want to interfere with airflow and drainage at the bottom of the boxwoods. But I would like to have, if you can imagine, like a miniature wooden planked fence with openings, were you to get lattice work and nail it to like a supporting fence behind it, that would be ideal. Because you see what we're doing, we're interrupting the flow.
Okay.
You know, the fence would take the brunt of the work. And you would also have that fence there to post a couple of signs every couple of feet. If you go online or to better hardware stores, you'll see there's really clever signs to beg people not to let their dogs pee on this garden.
Okay.
So then you'd have a structure to attach those signs to, and quite honestly, the sign would be another catch, so to speak, another dog blocker. And if you see that people are really ignoring the signs and being real idiots, make sure that area stays well watered, because the urine is much less harmful to plants when it's diluted. Oddly enough, the dogs who do the most damage are the ones that are not given enough water at home, that are left home all day, and it's really concentrated. So if you keep that area nice and moist without getting crazy, that will also dilute it. And I think between the fence, keeping the boxwoods happy with alkaline soil, and making sure it gets wet down there a good twice a week, say, if people are out walking a lot, you should be okay.
Very good. Thank you.
All right, Kent. Good luck, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll be doing a free composting workshop this coming Wednesday evening, September 10th, at the Phoenixville Country Club in Phoenixville, PA. I'll tell you exactly how to turn your soon-to-be abundant fall leaves into fabulous food and mulch for your lawn, landscape, and garden plants. That's a free event this Wednesday, September 10th at 7:30 at the Phoenixville Country Club. And don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with lots more of your fabulous phone calls and the bright and beautiful bedding plant you should bring inside for the winter. I'm bright and beautiful Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible in part by Summit Responsible Solutions. Summit Mosquito Dunks and Mosquito Bits contain BTI, which naturally controls mosquitoes without harming other living things, including people and pets. Online at SummitResponsibleSolutions.com. And Grand American Tours. In July of 2015, Mike McGrath will be hosting a river cruise through the gardens of Provence with Grand American Tours. Information available at GrandAmericanTours.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later, you might have some beautiful bedding plants outside that not only can come in for the winter, but should come in for the winter. We'll tell you how to fill your house with color for free after lots more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. John, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, I'm excited to be on.
Well, I'm excited to have you on. John, where are you, sir?
I'm in Norwalk, Connecticut.
Okay, what can we do for excitable John in Norwalk?
I purchased a house about 2 years ago, and I knew as soon as I moved in, I wanted to get apple trees. I don't have a big yard, so I got two miniature, well, they call them dwarf Honeycrisp apples.
Right.
And they came in the mail. They were like maybe 2 feet tall. So I planted them in the front yard, and they're definitely growing, and they look like they're doing great, except for a lot of the leaves have like an orange patch on the front of the leaves.
Uh-huh.
And then if you turn the leaf over, there's a bump that's maybe like an eighth of an inch to a quarter of an inch tall, and it looks like it has little spikes bursting out of the bump.
And
it looks like a...
And it's the emergency orange color, right?
Yeah, it's like a rusty orange. There's brown spots around it, but it's
right.
The orange spot that the bump is on the back of it.
One of the weirdest occurrences in the world of horticulture is the cross-transmissional problem known as cedar apple rust. And this only occurs when apple trees grow in the proximity of cedar trees. Somehow they pass this disease back and forth, and when it gets really bad, you have full-size Halloween lanterns of bright orange hanging from your trees. Really, the only cure for it is to find the cedar tree or the juniper, which is in the same plant family as the cedar, and get rid of them. I don't know of any apple varieties that might be resistant to cedar apple rust. There might be some out there. You know, when you bought your two trees, did the company specify that they would self-pollinate?
Yes, they said they would self-pollinate.
Oh, okay. So you don't need... Typically, with apple trees, you need a different variety that pollinates at the same time.
I definitely asked, and I bought two because I wanted to. They said it would be okay to just have one.
A single apple tree, even if it's self-pollinating, is going to be very lonely and produce very poorly. A pair of self-pollinators are going to do more than twice as good. And should you ever get a third tree, get a different variety that pollinates at the same time, and then you'll get a lot of apples. Now, it's been a while since I approached this topic, but I'll tell you, at our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org, and at the top of the page, click the link that says Garden Answers A to Z, and then go down to C for cedar apple rust, or it's probably under A for apple, and it'll walk you through the disease and if there's anything you can do. It's my understanding it's cosmetic. It's like car wreck cosmetic level, however. You know, it only looks good at Halloween. But you should be able to get apples. Now, do you know what you're going to have to do over the next, 8 years to get apples, even beyond this condition?
What will I have to do?
You have to prune both trees heavily right around the time that they begin to flower. Once they get to be about 5 feet tall, or even this coming spring, if there are a lot of branches, you want to remove branches that are growing straight up. You want to remove entire branches that are in the center of the tree. You want to remove branches that are going to be hard for you to reach. And you really do need to take off at least 1/3 of all the branches. Then, after that, when the flowers fall off and the little baby apples start to form, then you need to go out and do the most heartbreaking chore in all of gardening, which is called thinning the fruits. We call it thinning the fruits to try to prevent our brains from realizing that what we're doing is taking off 3/4 of the fruit and putting them in a 5-pound bucket and composting them.
Oh.
But fruit trees and peach trees will both set much more fruit than they can possibly take to a good size. And thinning the fruits will get you the kind of apples that you'll see in the stores. If you don't thin the fruits, you'll have a tree full of tiny, moldy, rotten, insect-filled apples.
Mm.
Now, I will also warn you that there are many pests and diseases that are going to potentially attack your trees. But if they're planted up high, they get good morning sun, you prune them every spring, and then you thin the fruits, you're three quarters of the way there.
Okay. So when should I actually expect to see flowers on the tree? Because I have never seen a flower yet.
That's a bad sign. You should see them very early in the spring. Look for other apple blossoms in the area and when the ornamental cherries are pollinating.
Okay.
All right, John?
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, sir.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Mary, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I am just fine today, Mary. Thank you. How are you doing?
I am great.
And where is Mary great?
I am in Ohio, just outside Cincinnati in Loveland.
Oh, okay. And is there a lot of love in Loveland?
You bet.
All right. What can we do for Mary in Loveland, just outside of Cincinnati?
I was calling in regards to our heirloom tomatoes getting a blight.
Okay. Now, you use the word blight. Blight is a very specific disease that you don't want to have. Tell me exactly what your tomatoes look like and what's happening.
The leaves are even turning brown, but they had some gray spots on them.
Okay. And what about the fruits?
They have little black spots on them, circles, little round circles.
And the circles, the spots, are all over the fruits and not just on the bottom?
I would say that's correct, yes.
Okay. Well, it sounds like, so you used the word blight. Did somebody tell you that they thought your tomatoes had late blight?
My husband.
And
because he's already used a product for blossom in rot, I think it was.
Right. Blossom end rot is a very common condition in tomatoes when there's not enough calcium in the soil. But blossom end rot doesn't affect the leaves of the tomato plants or the health of the plants themselves. It's kind of equally heartbreaking in that what happens is when the tomatoes get to full ripeness, they start to turn black and rot out on the bottom end. And that can be fixed by adding calcium to the soil.
But when he has done that.
Did you have that as well? Did you have blossom end rot, or he was just being hopeful?
No, prior to, he had blossom end rot on some of the heirloom tomatoes that he is growing.
Okay. So you're in a world of trouble, Mayor.
That's what he keeps telling me.
Yeah. Now, are you guys...
He needs a solution.
Well, there's not going to be a solution this year, unfortunately. The solution this year is you're getting your tomatoes from the farmer's market. The brown spots on the leaves and on the fruits, that's the telltale sign of late blight. And typically what happens once those signs show up, the plants wither up and die very quickly. Is that not happening?
Not yet, but that's what he's fearful of.
Right. Well, how long have the blotches been around?
It's been approximately 2 weeks,
would
say.
That's kind of unusual. Okay, so are you growing your tomatoes in raised beds, flat ground?
He has some in the garden, but he also has some in, it's a 5-gallon bucket, but then he has a system that a smaller container that he pours the water into there, and it goes in over time, little by little.
You're right.
So two different types of.
And are they both affected or just these 5-gallon bucket jobs?
It's mainly the 5-gallon bucket jobs.
Yes. Okay. So what's happening here is that's a really bad idea. An heirloom a 5-gallon bucket is, you know, for some reason, it's tremendously attractive to gardeners. I think the only thing uglier would be planting in an old toilet.
I agree.
Yeah, they're not really made for growing plants in. Very difficult to get the right amount of drainage holes and to get good drainage because they're so flat to the ground. And he seems obsessed by watering when you guys, outside of Cincinnati, you've had a very wet year, right?
But the past 3 weeks have been really dry in comparison to our previous summer months.
Right, but he was watering even during the wet periods.
Yes.
Yeah. See, I think the problem is cultural. I think he's just rotted out the root system of the plants. Now, what about the plants that are in the ground?
See, it's the same thing. That's the reason he thought it had nothing to do with that type of system.
Okay, so the plants in the ground have brown spotches on the fruits and the leaves.
Right.
Okay, so what I want you to do is you can either go to our website or you can just search late blight and go to Cornell University's website on this, and they'll show you pictures of late blight. And if that's what you have, you really should destroy your tomato plants. Literally pull them up, get them into trash bags, let the trash bags sit in the sun for a couple of days, and then put them out with the trash. Plants can't recover from late blight. But if you allow infected plants to stand in your garden, you will give late blight to everyone. Oh, the spores can travel miles on a windy day. You'll become the Typhoid Mary of tomato growers.
Oh, my goodness. That is dreadful.
Well, and that's how you got it. I mean, late blight hits good growers and bad growers. It hits organic growers and non-organic growers. Next year, I really urge you to grow your tomatoes. Make sure they go into different spots than they were this year. Make sure there's a lot of compost.
And that he normally does.
A lot of compost.
He does use compost.
So. Good. And then look for varieties that say they are resistant to late blight. Every seed company now has developed a tomato that is resistant. You can still grow some of your old favorite varieties as well, but make sure you include a couple of disease-resistant varieties so that you make sure you get some tomatoes in at the end of the season.
Oh, that's wonderful. You saved our day, and I'll be sure and pass along to my husband. And I appreciate you taking the time to speak with me, Mike. And you have a wonderful day.
You too. And I'm very sorry about your tomatoes this year, Mayor.
Good luck.
You too.
And bye now.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Mark, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello, how are you?
Good, Mark. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
And where is Mark doing all right?
Out near Lansdale.
Ah, Lansdale, Pennsylvania. What can we do for Mark in Lansdale?
Well, I've got a small garden, and it's producing virtually nothing. I've got one tomato, one pepper, a very small cucumber, and no zucchini, and no squash, no pumpkin.
Okay. Have you gardened in previous years?
Yes.
And do you grow in flat ground or raised beds?
I have a small raised bed.
And how big is the raised bed?
4x8.
And what is it filled with in terms of soil mixture?
I've used some cow manure, peat moss, and plain topsoil.
Okay, that's a very bizarre combination. Peat moss is highly acidic. Peat moss is not a typical soil additive. Pennsylvania soils tend to be naturally acidic. In years of heavy rain, the soils tend to be very acidic. The peat moss is making your soil more acidic. I think your problem is a very simple, poor choice of amendments. What you might be able to do, because your plants are still alive, right?
Yes.
Theoretically, you got another month left. Find some wood ash or a little bit of lime and dust it into your soil to try to counteract the peat moss. But next year, go out and get a big bag of either soil-free mix or perlite and work that into your soil to lighten up your soil, and then put 2 inches of good yard waste compost on the surface. No more cow manure. That stuff is collected at horrifying factory farms. God knows what's in it anymore. Peat moss is only for acid-loving plants like blueberries, azaleas, and rhododendrons. And, quote, topsoil, you know it. There's no legal definition of the word topsoil. In the world of horticulture, topsoil is the top 30 centimeters of what you find in an undisturbed forest. Now, I presume what you bought did not look like the top 30 centimeters in an undisturbed forest, did it?
No.
Yeah. If you put in some perlite to lighten up the soil and improve the drainage, totally natural, mined mineral, looks like little styrofoam balls, but it's actually a popped volcanic glass, and then 2 inches of good yard waste compost, your garden next year will be sensational. I would stay away from the manures and the peat moss. They can trip you up so easy, as you learned this year. And also, you know, this year was not an ideal year. We had a lot of rain and not a lot of sun. So the plants were stressed to begin with. And I think the excess, I think if you tested your soil, you would find it to be highly acidic, well outside the range that these plants enjoy. And that's kind of good news because that's real easy to correct next season.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Mark?
Thank you.
All right. Good luck, sir.
You too.
Well, it's time to take a little break and remind my fellow fans of the stinking rose that garlic planting time is here, and urge all of you newbies to buy some planting garlic, separate out the cloves, plant each clove 6 inches deep and 6 inches apart in your loosest, richest, best-draining soil, mulch the bed lightly with well-shredded leaves, and then just leave it all alone until spring. But don't go looking for all the pungent details under the letter G for garlic in our Garden Answers A to Z section just yet, because we'll be right back with more of your fascinating phone calls and the shade-loving plant that wants to be on your windowsill this winter. I'm Mike McGrath, and this is You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
You Bet Your Garden is made possible in part by Summit Responsible Solutions. Summit Mosquito Dunks and Mosquito Bits contain BTI, which naturally controls mosquitoes without harming other living things, including people and pets. Online at SummitResponsibleSolutions.com. And Grand American Tours. In July of 2015, Mike McGrath will be hosting a river cruise through the gardens of Provence with Grand American Tours. Information available at GrandAmericanTours.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will give you all the warning you need to move your best part of your shade garden indoors to lift your spirits all winter long. It'll be better than sitting in front of those light boxes for seasonal affective disorder. But before that, more of your affected phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Lionel, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi there. Good to hear your voice.
Good to hear your voice, Lionel. Where's it coming from?
I am at Penswood Village, a continuing care community in Newtown, Bucks County.
Oh, that's a beautiful area out there.
Indeed it is.
All right, what can we do for Lionel?
Well, I've got two problems in my little raised bed garden. I have peppers, and they look fine, except they rot before they ripen. And I have burgeoning blackberries, and they look fine, except they shrivel up before they ripen. What am I doing wrong?
Okay, so these are two amazingly different crops. Blackberries are cane fruits that spread from year to year. And obviously peppers are very tender perennial plants that most people grow as annuals. You say you got a raised bed. How big is your raised bed?
20 by 20.
Well, that's not a raised bed, though, Lionel.
Well, I have a path within it, and none of the sections is more than 3 feet wide,
okay,
as you advise.
Okay, very good, very good. And where are the blackberries? Are they off in their own corner, at least for now?
I have them scattered around the area because I figured they might be a little more disease-resistant if they weren't too close.
So you got raised beds. What are they filled with?
I add compost every year as I accumulate it.
That's very good. That's very good. Any mulch on the surface of the soil?
Not usually. Once in a while, I will try early in the spring trying to keep the weeds down.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, I can't keep up with it.
How much sun?
Full sun every day.
All day?
Yes.
Okay. Where do you get your pepper plants from?
I grow them from seed. I start them inside. And I'm using the same seeds this year that I did last year. I don't remember this problem last year, or at least not as bad.
And the peppers are rotting, but the leaves of the plant look okay?
Yes, the plants look perfectly healthy.
Is there any grass, any lawn clippings used in the compost that you guys are making?
Probably. I forgot to mention, the blackberries shrivel up one branch at a time.
Mm-hmm.
The whole plant may look perfectly healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Suddenly one branch will start to turn red or brown, and the blackberries on it go. And as the harvest season goes on, it gets worse and worse.
I'm suspecting herbicide poisoning.
Really?
Yeah. Is the lawn treated?
Well, there's no lawn nearby, but the grass clippings from the lawn maybe in that compost. I don't always see what they put in it.
This is a more common problem than people expect. What I tell people, before you use compost, get like a clamshell, like you get a pound of salad greens from at the supermarket. Punch some holes in the bottom, fill it with the compost, and then plant pea seeds. Get some snow peas or snap peas. But peas are like a canary in the coal mine. If they start to shrivel up and turn brown, that means there is enough herbicide, persistent herbicides that they use on commercial lawn care these days, to actually kill the plants. So next year, before you do anything, you want to test any new compost you're adding. But I also want to say that the full-size bell peppers are some of the longest season crops that we grow. They can take well over 100, 110 days to achieve full ripeness. And they're really bred for California and for warmer season climates. When did you plant your peppers?
I planted them in the house in March. I was extra early this year, and they were a little big by the time I was able to get them out. But they transplanted beautifully, and
okay,
I had high hopes for them.
Next year, just for giggles, if you're going to do the same thing, buy a pepper plant at a local nursery and compare it with your one started from seed. What I'm going to recommend, at the very least, next year, you look at the days to maturity of these bell peppers. As you noted, the smaller varieties tend to do better in our climate. Look for peppers with a much shorter days to maturity. If you can find the seed packet, you may be astounded by how long it takes these things to achieve full ripe stage. And then test your compost, because I fear there's herbicide residue in there.
Thanks very much for the suggestions. I enjoy your show tremendously.
All right. I'm sorry about your problems this year, Lionel, and better luck next season.
Thank you.
1-888-346-9499. Bob, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Bob. How are you, sir?
I'm all right today.
Okay. And where is Bob all right?
In Connersville, Indiana.
And you know the next question. Where's Connersville in the great state of Indiana?
Oh, for heaven's sake. It's on the east side of, we're about 10 miles from the Ohio border, halfway to Dayton, halfway to Indianapolis, and halfway to Cincinnati. It's 55 miles from all three of those, so a good place to be.
Okay, good. So you can always have your choice of where you want to go.
Oh, yes. I call it heaven. So.
All right. What can we do for Bob in heaven?
Well, several years ago, all of a sudden, I started having whatever, I didn't know what it was called, but the more I talked about it, people said, well, that's called, we call it Creeping Charlie. It's a cute little plant that grows in the ground. It doesn't dig deep. It just sits on top and hops around and all of a sudden. But right now, if I looked out in my yard, because we had some good rains the last couple of weeks, and the grass hadn't grown yet, that Creeping Charlie, though, has got a beautiful little leaf, but it's got a horrible smell when you cut it, and it takes over everything. It just kind of smothers everything else out. So
who cuts your lawn?
I do.
What do you cut it with?
I cut it with a push mower, and I bag it, usually.
Anytime you don't allow a lawn to have 3 inches of green showing, that's the grass is 3 inches tall after you're done cutting it, it's going to be weakened and it's going to be vulnerable to takeover by other plants. And you're removing the lawn's favorite food. Those clippings are 10% nitrogen. When you leave those clippings on the lawn gets a little nutritious snack every time you mow, and that gives it the strength to fight off weeds like this. But I predict that if you just change a couple tactics of lawn care, that your lawn will be able to resist this weed.
Okay.
Now, I need you to go to our website for this because it's a very specific formula. And even if I could remember it correctly, you wouldn't remember it correctly. But our lawn care expert, Iowa State turf grass professor Dr. Nick Christians, was doing a series of debunking articles once, trying home remedies to prove that they didn't work. And he found one that worked. And it was 20 Mule Team Borax against Creeping Charlie. And what you have to do is you have to go out and buy a pressurized sprayer. You got to buy a box of 20 Mule Team Borax at the grocery store. And then you go to our website, go to youbetyourgarden.org, click on Garden Answers A to Z, and go to C for Creeping Charlie. And it'll tell you the exact mixture to use to spray on your Creeping Charlie. Borax, boron, is a nutrient for lawns. Boy, does your lawn need nutrients, too. But it's toxic to this broadleaf weed. There is also a product called Iron X. Iron is good for lawns. Iron helps green up lawns. But sprayed on a broadleaf weed like Creeping Charlie, it's toxic to that weed. I would not use both. I would make a choice of whether I'm going to try the Borax or one of these new iron-based herbicides, get a good knockdown, but then you got to let your lawn grow to 3 inches. I would give it a gentle feeding this fall, the most important time to feed a lawn.
Okay.
And then as we go forward, stop collecting those clippings. And if you leave your clippings on the lawn, make sure your blade is sharp, cut it 3 inches, and give it a feeding at least every fall. It should be spring and fall, but it doesn't have to be heavy duty, a very gentle feeding. And I think your grass will outcompete this weed.
Okay. Now, does that spray, that's, I got to keep it off the flowers then because it'll kill the flowers, right?
It'll kill any leaf that it adheres to. It does not harm the blades of grass. So, for instance, if there's flowers right next to the Creeping Charlie, it makes sense to pull that Creeping Charlie out by hand.
Okay.
Or if you have somebody working with you, they can simply hold a piece of cardboard in front of the good flower.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Good luck, sir.
Bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week. Defy winter by bringing in your begonias. Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden, please get us started by reading this week's question.
Sure, Mike. Rose in Riverton, New Jersey writes, I planted dragon begonias this year on the advice of a friend after complaining that nothing would flower in my shady yard. I bought a dozen plants, mail order, put them in the ground in early spring, and by Mother's Day, all but one were thriving. My husband bought me another 4 plants at a local nursery, and I planted them in the same area. It is now near the end of August, and my begonias have thrived, providing me with a beautiful bounty of nonstop lovely red blooms that delight me every day. My question is, can I somehow preserve them for replanting next year? I've been asking friends, and I've gotten as many answers as I have friends. Some say, no way, when they die, they're done. Some say to cut them way back at the end of the season and bring them indoors in pots. Some say to hang them bare root in my basement through the winter. What do you say? Well, she certainly asked the right person. Or maybe somebody finally asked the right question. Or...
Well, careful there. Your head keeps spinning that way. You're going to end up looking like the little girl in The Exorcist. I think what you're trying to say is that I have personally been perennializing begonias for many years and can say from experience that it's super easy. But before we get into the details, we should mention that there are 2 distinctly different types of begonias.
I thought there were thousands of different kinds.
Don't exaggerate, there are only 1,600. But that's species. We're talking about the 2 main types. Her, quote, dragon wing begonias, a popular line of hybrids with big leaves and very colorful flowers, are an example of the bedding plant type, sold as seeds or small plants, and meant to be displayed in shady gardens from spring until fall, when the first frost typically kills them. Same as other, quote, annual flowers, like marigolds and impatiens.
And the other type?
Tuberous begonias. These fall into the category of summer-blooming bulbs. Like dahlias, tuberous begonias are sold as big bulbs or rhizomes and are typically planted in containers so that you can easily take the root out before the first hard frost and store it indoors for use in following years.
Do you have to? Can't you just plant it in the ground and mulch it heavily?
You can in very warm climates, but both tuberous begonias and dahlias are very frost-sensitive. And in most parts of the country, you have to bring the roots inside over the winter.
Could you just bring the whole pot inside?
Yes, and if you provide enough bright light, that plant will bloom for you indoors all winter.
And if you can't?
Then it's better to remove the bare roots, pack them in slightly damp perlite and peat moss, and store them in a cool, dry area safe from mice.
So what about her dragon wings?
They're super easy. All of the so-called annual begonias are actually perennial in frost-free climates. If you pot them up and bring them indoors before the nights start dropping into the 40s, they'll bloom for you all winter long.
If you have bright enough light...
No, that's the best part. Unlike their tuberous cousins, annual begonias don't require a lot of light. These are shade-loving plants outdoors, so any somewhat sunny windowsill will keep them alive and flowering. Just make sure it's well insulated so they don't get too cold at night.
What about the friend who recommended cutting them back before bringing them in?
Utter nonsense. Too much time on their hands. I've never done anything like that. And some of my, quote, annual begonias are over a decade old. Just assemble a bunch of containers with good drainage holes and fill them with a mixture of compost and good quality potting soil. That means a very lightweight bag of soil-free mix with no added chemical plant food, water-holding crystals, or other nonsense. And do this now. Don't wait. Then you can leave the planted containers outside in the shade, water them really well, and bring them indoors a week or two later when they'll well be over any transplant shock.
And people really shouldn't use garden soil in these containers, right?
Correct. Potted plants want a combination of compost for nutrition and a nice, light, soil-free potting mix for good drainage. Sure, you can keep some of your garden soil around the roots when you transplant them, but that's it. If you fill the containers with your outdoor dirt, you're going to have sickly-looking plants instead of beautiful indoor color.
Then what?
Well, water them when the pots feel light to the touch, ideally by sitting each container in a sink with a few inches of water in the bottom for a half hour or so. When you lift the containers out to let them drain, note how heavy they feel. Don't water those containers again until they feel much lighter. And don't ever let water collect in the saucer underneath the pot. That saucer is only there to protect surfaces underneath the plant. And don't rush the season when you think it's time to take them outside again. April is much too early. As with tomatoes, these tropical plants are going to do best when they don't go outside until nights are reliably in the 50s. Well, that sure was a fun way to have free indoor color all winter long now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, with links to articles on how to do the same with your precious pepper plants, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to plug up the drain holes in my containers if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your rich, at refuse teeming towards our garden shore. At garden at whyy.org. And if you happen to live somewhere,
please, please tell us where it is. Oh, please, we hate to guess.
And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org. where you'll find answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez-Lunez, executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Rich Banowitz and Sarah Kazar, You Bet Your Garden's webpage wonders. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Our editor is Al Banks. Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia. Special thanks to our hired hand, Matt Hudecki, whose excellent assistance in my garden this spring and summer has resulted in a record-breaking crop of super juicy organic peaches this fall. Who beat the brown rot? That's right, who did? And thanks to Peter Christian for helping us out with this week's show, even though he didn't do a darn thing for my peaches. I'm your host, Peach Drunk Mike McGrath, and I'll take a short break from the harvest to see you again next week. What's aquatic when young, a fast flyer when grown, and eats lots of mosquitoes all the time? I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll take a close look at dragonflies, damselflies, and other mosquito hawks. Plus your fabulous phone calls.